This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Emails are at talk@talklouisiana.org. And we begin with State Representative Edward Ted James, who is head of the Legislative Black Caucus and is, of course, in the middle of a legislative session. When I say the middle, we're heading down the stretch with fewer than 3 weeks left at the Capitol, and there's been much going on there. And we're going to spend much of our conversation with Ted discussing what's happening north of us near Monroe with the state police fiasco, and that's what it is regarding the death in 2019 of Ronald Green. Before we get there, though, a few legislative matters to discuss to begin, and one of those that many listeners have chimed in on is the Breck bill, which cleared the Senate 28-6, Bodie White's bill to split up parks and recreation in Baton Rouge. And Ted James, I understand that the sledding in the House may be different. Is this bill dead on arrival, or does it still have a chance?
You know, I think any time a bill is still in play, it has a chance. I don't serve on local and municipal, but I'm hearing that it's not going to be as easy to get out of the House as it was in the Senate. So I think that we have three members from the Baton Rouge delegation on local and municipal. I know two of the three are opposed to the bill. So I have my own break bill that I've been concerned about, so that's been my major focus.
What is your bill?
My bill is to rededicate the land that was dedicated for Memorial Stadium. Current law says that it's only for recreational purposes, but Breck has plans to totally revitalize that area and bring some commercial, some medical, some educational components. But state law is preventing that because when the land was dedicated, it provides for only recreational purposes. So my bill is on the Senate floor, awaiting final passage. So my focus has been on trying to help Breck improve the that part is one that was very important to me. I played in the band there, played football there as a kid, so I want to help them revitalize that area.
So you're saying the stadium should be kept in place, or what should happen there?
Oh, no, they're going to keep the stadium in place, but just around the stadium, that the plans are to redo it to have a, you know, complete complex where you could do soccer and football and baseball and have some medical services there, educational retail. The plans that Breck had, you know, unfortunately, we haven't been able to talk about the good things that Breck because everyone's been focused on Bodie's bill. But I'll tell you that the plans for Memorial Stadium are plans that I think the entire Baton Rouge community would be proud of.
Well, the other story that involves something that Ted James is quite familiar with that has captured the attention, and justifiably so, of many of our listeners, is that the chairman of the state Republican Party says that State Representative Ray Garofalo should be restored as leader of the House Education Committee. Now, Garofalo made offensive comments about slavery, talking about, quote, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and few would argue that there was anything good about slavery, and he was removed as head of the Education Committee, and members of that committee, both Republicans and Democrats, have talked about the friction that is there. What's happening on that front, Ted James?
You know, from all my accounts, Ray is no longer the chair. You know, I don't know if that's permanent or if it is for the remainder of this session, but, you know, I agree that he has been a major distraction. You know, I won't comment on the chair of the Republican Party. He's not a member of the legislature, so his opinion means absolutely nothing to me, and I don't think that the speaker is going to be moved by it either. So that's just, you know, Ray continuing to show why he's probably not best suited for the chair and a lot of his comments post that meeting.
Well, Clay Schexnider, the head of the GOP in the House, has repeatedly declined to comment on Garofalo's status or issues surrounding the controversy. And the American Civil Liberties Union has taken issue with Garofalo's statement that Schexnider sided with the Legislative Black Caucus over a fellow Republican. So, Clay Schexnider, in your belief, it sounds like, is steadfast in keeping Mr. Garofalo off as chair of the committee. Is that where it is right now?
That's my belief, and I think that, you know, the untold part of the story is, you know, Ray has done, you know, a lot more to ignore the wills of the speaker and simple things that have been asked. I think that, you know, the speaker pro tem, Tanner McGee, was very, you know, clear in his statement that there are certain things that have been asked of Ray that he just has refused to comply with, and that's why he's no longer the chair. Of course, you know, there are a lot of conversations about the Black Caucus not voting on tax bills because of Ray, but every fiscal session, the Democrats, we hold votes until we get agreements on some of our bills. So to blame all of that on Ray is not accurate, because every fiscal session, we know that when 2/3 votes are needed, that's the only time that the Democratic Caucus can really flex our muscles to get some of the things that we want done. So it just so happened that these things are happening after Ray's comments. But, you know, every fiscal session, the Democrats kind of coalesce and hold bills back and listen until we get some agreements on some of our proposals. So that's not 100% about Ray.
Ted James is with us. Your number again is 877-217-5757. But after leaked copies of body camera footage showed state troopers repeatedly punching and stunning Ronald Green during a traffic stop near Monroe in 2019, Superintendent Lamar Davis Friday released what he said was all video evidence from the encounter. Now, Ted James actually saw this before it was released publicly, and it is disturbing, but where does that stand right now, Representative James?
Well, right now, it's still under federal investigation. Of course, the video everyone saw, what I saw last year, extremely disturbing. I think that, you know, there may be some intervention from the feds that is probably needed with state police. You know, I want to give the colonel an opportunity to really shake things up and try to get that agency back on track. But I think that what we know is that the issues there have been so deep, and I don't even know if he's been there long enough to even understand the depth of the, you know, the cover-up at state police. So I think that, you know, we are looking at possible legislative hearings on it. I know that with litigation, it's not much that can be said, but I think that there's a lot more that the public should know and understand in short order.
And this one has caught the attention of national media, and justifiably so. There are 9 videos, and it all confirms a beating and a tasing of Mr. Green, who was in custody after a traffic chase. Now, most people believe he shouldn't have to die for that, and he was, it appears, Ted James, he was appearing to comply with the officers. Why did he get beaten so savagely?
I think he's been beat. I wish I could answer that. I don't have that answer. I don't have an answer for why, you know, George Floyd was beat so savagely. I don't have an answer for Ahmaud Arbery, other than the difference between them and a lot of these other ones are that they're African Americans, and that way too often that being stopped is a death sentence for certain folks.
And there is an investigation not only of what happened, but some would say, why 2 years? Well, the original story was that he had died in the car crash, right? There is obviously a case in which there is a cover-up that is suspected. Does the evidence corroborate that?
Oh, most certainly. I think that it is very clear that that the original statement that was put out does not match the facts. I think that, you know, what we knew last year when we were able to view the video was that there were major inconsistencies with the report and with the facts. It was clear that Ronald Green did not die from a car accident. It was, you know, very clear even from the damage that we saw the vehicle. You know, Ronald Green was beaten to death, and then, you know, Trooper Chris Hollinsworth, he bragged about it. He talked about how he beat the F out of him and how he choked him. And, you know, and I think that, you know, this exposed a major cover-up in state police. From my understanding from the district attorney, John Belt, he didn't even receive the case for months. And in addition, when he saw it, he immediately, on the day that he saw that he received the case, he called DOJ, the same day because he saw that not only the state police investigate itself as they always have, but the same troop. So the Troop F, which has many issues, you know, we're talking about Ronald Green, but there's also the Bowman case where we know that Bowman was beaten by Troop F and one of the same officers that was in, troopers that was involved in Ronald Green has been fired because of his interaction with Bowman in a separate incident a couple months after Ronald Green.
All right, hold tight. Representative James with us for a few more minutes, and he, of course, is preparing for a busy day at the Capitol. But one of the troopers involved, Master Trooper Chris Hollingsworth, was killed in a single vehicle highway crash in September, just hours after he learned he would be fired for his role in the death of Ronald Green. We'll talk about it when we return in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Ted James with us for a few more minutes. So we're going to get to as many of you as we can. Please be brief, starting with Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Representative James and the audience, as always. Representative, with the feds having to get involved in this Louisiana State Police fiasco, as a legislator, how are our Caucasian staunch conservative Republican legislators, what are they saying to hold on to this Ku Klux Klan mentality? And why do they say, oh, it's going to take so much time to resolve this?
All right. Is that fair? Is he on the right track, Ted?
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, we've been moving forward with a lot of bills regarding, you know, reforming police. I think that we had a lot of support from conservative members to end qualified immunity. We had support for other measures. So I'm not going to say that my colleagues are tone deaf to the issue. I think that by the bills that are moving through the legislature, it shows that it's not, you know, reform and policing is not just a function of the Black caucus. We've had bipartisan support for all of those bills. So now with the feds, you know, we can't rush them. And we also have to recognize that there's been a whole new administration. So, of course, that impedes an investigation that started under the Trump administration and now is under the Biden administration. So what we know traditionally takes a couple of years will probably take at least that, if not some. And, you know, although this happened 2 years ago, the feds didn't get the information until 8 or 9 months after the incident. So, you know, we are in a holding pattern, so to speak.
Paul Annopoulos, Paul, you're on with Ted James.
Yes, sir. I Representative James. Just a question. Should the state, is it a proper procedure for the state police to investigate themselves? And does the governor or the attorney general have plans to bring in outside investigators?
Thanks. All right.
Currently that has been the practice for state police to investigate officer-involved shootings. I don't think that they should investigate themselves. We've had discussions about bringing in outside agencies, but of course, with those conversations come, you know, a conversation about cost and who's going to pay for that and where is that department going to be housed. And the idea is always shut down because, you know, as a matter of a fiscal issue. I think that, you know, unless and until the legislature really decides to invest in this or the federal government tells us to do something different, we'll probably still be in this pattern. But, you know, before last year, I think, you know, when Alton Sterling was killed here in Baton Rouge, I was the first one to say bring in state police because I thought that state police was the gold standard in policing in Louisiana. We know differently now. So, of course, my concern is that state police shouldn't be investigating anything until we have confidence in state police, because I have very little at this moment until I could see some more changes by Colonel Davis.
Ray in Prairieville. Ray, you're on with Ted James.
Thanks for taking the call. Two quick questions for Mr. James. First, U.S. News and World Report rates Louisiana as the 50th worst in the state. United States. That will take some tax increase to change that. Can we get that out? The other one is, how can we possibly have spent $50 million for the Stumberg I-10 overchange?
All right. A couple of different questions, but go Go ahead, Ted.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, we rank 50th for a lot of reasons. And I think a lot of those are because the legislature refuses to respond to certain things. I don't think we need to raise taxes in order to get some of these things done. I think we need to stop giving away a lot of our tax dollars, the $1 billion we give in corporate giveaways. I think we should redirect those. I think that we should have had a more serious conversation about legalizing marijuana to make sure that we had additional revenue to address some of our issues. And I think we have to, you know, make sure that we get serious about addressing the issues of equity and health. I think, you know, COVID-19 exposed what many of us already knew, in that, you know, there are huge health disparities in communities of color and communities of low income. And I think that as a legislature, we haven't fully come to grips with that, or at least agreed to try to solve it. So, I mean, there are a lot of reasons. I think legislative will has been one of the reasons why we continue to rank last in a lot of different areas. A lack of will, should I say.
Tomorrow will mark 1 year since the tragic death of George Floyd, the person who kneeled on his neck for 9.5 minutes. Derek Chauvin is now awaiting sentencing for a conviction on murder. But what has come of this? How has it changed the conversation, if any, in our country regarding mistreatment, both at the hands of the police and, in this case, as it often is the case, a black man in the custody of a white police officer?
Honestly, I don't think it's changed much from the conversation that we had, the qualified immunity bill. We had an amendment put on the bill that basically tries to limit folks from receiving justice in the court by having defendants pay for lawsuits. But the conversation was that, oh, these claims are frivolous, and there are people that still believe that the George Floyds, the Ahmaud Arbery's, the Jordan Davis's are frivolous. So until folks really value what's happening, we're not going to really see a drastic change. Now, we've had several companies come up to us as a caucus, and, you know, my company now wants to do so much in terms of social justice and, you know, helping us to provide scholarships that we do. That's great. And of course, I'm not going to turn down dollars that go to Louisiana students. But, you know, those companies need to be at the table when it's time to address policy that we know allows this type of behavior to exist. And I think that we are still having conversations that, oh, anytime we talk about reforming law enforcement, it is an anti-law enforcement conversation. But I think that what we saw last week with the Ronald Green situation, what we've learned, we know that every person that puts on that badge is not the honorable person that we all want to see from law enforcement. And I think that some of my colleagues have a hard time accepting that as the truth.
Ted James, as always, good to catch up with you. We'll be calling again soon. Thanks for the update. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Jim.
Representative Ted James, Democrat from Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. We're waiting on former U.S. Senator Byron Dorgan. But before we get to him, let's talk about the passing of former LSU Chancellor Jim Wharton, who died at 83 on Saturday. A man who was on this program many times. He led LSU from 1981 to 88. He was the chancellor when I graduated in 1981. I was his first graduating class in August of 1981, and the commencement speaker was one Gus Weil. But Jim Wharton was a towering intellect, perhaps the smartest of many smart chancellors LSU has had. He scored a perfect score on his GRE. And he had an emotional pull to LSU because, unlike most other leaders of the university, he was a graduate of the school, got his master's and PhD in record time at LSU, was a professor of chemistry of note. Many of his students in chemistry years later had no idea he had been the former chancellor. I recall one, Melanie Dugas, who worked at Books A Million back in the day when Buddy Romer and I were closing the coffee shop. She was taking his class and was talking about what a remarkable professor he was, and had no idea that he had been the chancellor, and he changed open admissions, got a lot of criticism for it, but because of that, the graduation rate at LSU increased from 33% when he started to 60% when he left, and he left a remarkable legacy, including a major contribution in the Nobel Prize LSU received a few years ago for the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. So Jim Morton will be missed, and we will talk about him more, I'm sure, in the days to come. And we're joined now by former U.S. Senator Byron Dorgan, Democrat from North Dakota. Senator Dorgan, good to hear your voice.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, and you're involved in various and sundry other things since leaving office in 2011. And before we get to what you're up to now, 10 years removed from leaving Capitol Hill as a senator, things have changed a bit there, haven't they?
Boy, they have indeed. I served there a long while. I was 12 years in the U.S. House and 18 years in the U.S. Senate. I chose not to run again, not to seek re-election. I wanted to do other things. I just heard you discuss an educator. I've been doing some teaching at Georgetown University, and I've written 5 books. And so I've done a lot of things, but I worry a great deal about the United States Congress and about the politics in our country, because we deserve better.
You came into the House on the same day, January 3rd, 1981, as a fellow named Buddy Romer, who died last week, the former governor.
Yes, indeed.
And I'm sure you knew him well.
I did indeed. Buddy was extraordinary. He was smart as a whip. You know, he was a very bright guy. Different. I mean, he had his own mind made up about a lot of things. But I liked Buddy. Buddy was a good guy, and I was sorry. I did see in the newspaper that he had passed away, and I was sorry to see that.
And that was a time when a moderate Democrat, and Romer was one then, from Louisiana could get elected, and a moderate Democrat from North Dakota could get elected. Now it's much harder.
It's more difficult. It sure is. You know, the two political parties have changed a lot. I would say especially the Republican Party, much more dramatic change. The Democratic Party, we've got some people in our party that are pretty far off from the center. But I don't know. I worry a lot about the fact that we have a lot in front of us in this country that needs to get done and get fixed and get improved. And yet the differences of opinion between, you know, not just politicians, but also ordinary citizens, those differences somehow can't be discussed without being disrespectful in many cases. And that's the wrong thing to do. I mean, what we need to do in this country is to find opportunities to come together and to, you know, to compromise. Compromise is a lubrication of democracy, because if people believe different things and believe very strongly, you still want to get together, respect each other, and then find a compromise that works, that you know, that moves the ball forward, that improves our country.
877-217-5757 is your number, and we're going to talk with Senator Dorgan about a major rail project that he believes will help Louisiana, but we are getting some emails regarding his other activities. He mentioned his writing exploits, and he has written 2 novels described as echo thrillers, and you, like the former congressman, former governor Buddy Romer, you had a great love of reading before you became an author, correct? You were a voracious reader, are a voracious reader in the same realm as Buddy Romer.
Yeah, you know, I like to read a lot and keep current on what's happening in the world. And I also like to write. I come from a high school senior class of 9 students in a town of 300 people in southwestern North Dakota. So I've always remembered, and I've credited my English teacher, Dolores Tollefson, who helped me during those years when I was in that little town in that high school. And so, but I've always enjoyed reading.
And it served you well. A man who was curious and served, as he stated, 30 years in the United States Congress, 18 in the House, 12 in the Senate, and has been around 10 years at post as an authority, and now is involved in a major project. And before we get there, one more question from a listener. You're obviously a native son of North Dakota, of German and Norwegian ancestry, sounding a lot like our former basketball coach at LSU, Dale Duard Brown. You've probably heard his name a time or two, the pride of mine.
Oh, I sure have indeed. Dale Brown began coaching, I think, in Minot, North Dakota. No, he's a celebrated person in North Dakota, and we love him a lot.
Yeah, well, he loves his home state, and you're from Dickinson, North Dakota. Where is that in relation to Minot?
I was actually born in Dickinson, but, you know, that's 65 miles from my little town called Regent. Everything is a long ways away in North Dakota. We're a pretty good-sized state. And Minot would be about 240 miles from where I grew up.
Near the Canadian border, right?
Well, it's not. It's south of the Canadian border, probably. I think Minot's about 80 miles south of the Canadian border. And I grew up down in the southwestern corner, more down by the Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
Well, there have been some great North Dakotans that Dale Brown likes to tout. Roger Maris, Angie Dickinson. She's still alive, yeah. Dan Downtown. Dan, we start with you. You're on with Senator Dorgan.
Yes, Senator. Do you give any credence to the argument that D.C. should get two senators because North Dakota and South Dakota have less people but four senators?
All right. Well, I'm sure you've heard that a time or two.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think it's wrong that you've got a fairly sizable population without representation in the Congress, without real representation. And I just have to tell you that I sat, I think, for 16 years in the Senate in the Appropriations Committee. I was an appropriator, among other things. And I sat next to Dianne Feinstein on that Appropriations Committee for 16 years, and I seldom missed the opportunity to remind her that I think she represented 32 million people, and I represented 700,000, and we had the same vote. But, you know, I mean, that's the way the system was constructed. The House was based on population. The Senate was based on states. And so but he raises an interesting point, and I personally wish that the folks in the District of Columbia had the opportunity to have representation in the Congress.
Well, as I mentioned, Senator Dorgan is involved in a potential railroad merger between Kansas City Southern and Canadian Pacific, and you believe this would help the country, but in particular Louisiana and specifically Louisiana shippers. Why?
Well, I think, first of all, I have always been opposed to more rail mergers. The fact is we don't need bigger railroads in this country. We have some very, very large Class 1 railroads. So I've always been opposed to that until I saw the Canadian Pacific proposal to merge with Kansas City Southern, which is a friendly merger. It still would be the smallest of the Class 1 railroads even after that merger. But what it would do would be to open up both coasts, Canadian on the Canadian side and the U.S. side, the Pacific and Atlantic coasts, also with the Gulf Coast down south and deep into Mexico. And it would promote more competition, in my judgment, and more opportunities to better markets. I just think it's one of those things, given what was negotiated with the U.S., what's called USMC, Canada and Mexico, and the U.S. Trade Agreement, I think that's the kind of merger that I would think makes some sense. But I don't want the Surface Transportation Board, which is going to make the ultimate judgments here, I don't want them to decide that this is an approach that should allow them to do more on mergers. But I do think this one makes sense and I think ought to be approved.
How would it work?
Well, as I said, it connects two railroads that don't have any overlapping connections. They don't have a circumstance where they are competing on any lines, and it would allow transportation opportunities. For example, for certain kind, there are certain choke points in the country these days, with most of the railroads finding choke points in Chicago and elsewhere. This would allow movement to various markets without, in many cases, being in those choke points. So you have direct shipments from shippers to their destination. You have faster shipments in many cases that would come as a result of this. I just think it's one of those things that makes sense. As I said, I do not support rail mergers by and large. I think this one is the rare exception.
Well, these are two big entities, aren't they?
They are. They're still the even when merged, they will be the smallest of the major Class One railroads.
So you're saying it's not going to rock the world, but together they would be stronger and better than they are singularly.
And I think honestly that together they will benefit shippers. If that were not the case, I would not be supportive at all.
We'll be back and spend a few more minutes with former Senator Byron Dorgan after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. U.S. Senator Byron Dorgan, 1992 to 2011 in the upper chamber, and he was a member of the United States House from 81 to 92. So 30 years,
a long
18
time.
Years in the Senate, 18 years in the Senate, 12 in the House. I had it reversed, but three terms, and it's hard to win three terms. And you served with some Louisiana luminaries, John Brough and Bennett Johnston and Mary Landrieu, and mm-hmm. even got in with David Vitter. You have any impressions of the Louisianans you served with in the Senate?
Well, I used to play tennis with John Brough. John is a really good tennis player, and we had fierce competitions playing tennis. Bennett Johnston, Bennett was also a tennis player, by the way, but he was chairman of the Senate Energy Committee when I was a senior member of the committee as well. Both really terrific senators. They were there when I began serving in the United States Senate.
Well, Senator Dorgan is here today touting the potential benefit of a merger between Kansas City Southern and Canadian Pacific that he says would be a boon for Louisiana shippers. He did note that despite the fact that these are two significant entities, that it would be the smallest of the Class 6 Class 1 railroads by revenue. And it is designed, the merger is presumably, to create jobs. And in Louisiana, we need as many of those as do other states. And on the whole, though, a listener notes that mergers have not really created jobs, the media being a classic example, the entity I'm in, mergers have resulted in fewer jobs. So how can we be certain that this will be different?
Well, I think that, by the way, the listener is right about a number of those circumstances. I do think that the opportunity to have one carrier that is connecting both the Atlantic, the Pacific, and the Gulf of Mexico, deep into Mexico, to more markets that can access markets internationally, overseas, and so on. I don't think there's much question that I think this one would be good for our economy, our country's economy, and would produce jobs. But as I've said to you, I'm not a big fan of mergers ever. I've been opposed to most all rail mergers. This one, I think, is the rare exception. And I think so because the trade agreements that have been developed, USMCA and so on, this is a carrier that will eliminate choke points, find new markets, and I think promote more competition as a result of getting those goods to those markets.
Haley at LSU asks, who is the most memorable senator you worked with?
Oh, my gosh. What a great question. There are a lot of memorable senators. And, you know, the interesting thing is I found that most people that got to the United States Senate have some significant skills. You never quite know what they are until they show up and show themselves. But I don't know. I think, I served with Teddy Kennedy for a long time. I think he was an extraordinarily good senator. He knew how to move legislation. The interesting thing about Ted Kennedy was he wasn't somebody that needed to get everything with his legislation. He just wanted to move the ball forward some. He worked a great deal with Alan Simpson from Wyoming, a very conservative Republican senator. And I served with a lot of very interesting people. And as I look back, an Alabama senator, Howell Heflin, a Democrat. You remember, we used to elect Democrats down
yes,
in states like
I
Alabama.
Recall.
Howell was he was the head of the Supreme Court in Alabama, and he was a great big guy, and he had one of the best senses of humor. Fritz Hollings. I mean, nobody had a better sense of humor than Fritz Hollings. Uh-huh. The problem is, I had trouble understanding Fritz all the time.
well, Kennedy, you mentioned Ted Kennedy, and people may be surprised to know He was friends, I don't know if close friends, but friends with Alan Simpson and with Orrin Hatch, two people who ideologically were not in his camp, and that's an understatement. Today, that kind of thing just doesn't happen that often, does it?
Not so much. And you're right when you talk about Orrin Hatch, a very conservative Republican from Utah. He and Ted Kennedy were friends, good friends, and worked on legislation together. Bob Dole was one of the best senators I ever served with. Bob Dole was, boy, he just had a basic smart instinct about what needed to get done and how to get it done. I served with Tom Daschle for many, many years. Tom is a very close personal friend even today, a really good senator as well. But there were just a lot of them that I think had skills that were quite extraordinary. And people were willing then to work together and not worry about the folks back home thinking you've sold away your allegiance to them. Working together means trying to find the best of each party rather than the worst of both.
What did you think when you witnessed the January 6th incident at the Capitol?
I was horrified by that. I think, and some of your listeners will not like what I say about this, but I think Donald Trump provoked and stimulated a substantial amount of that by telling the country that the election was stolen. It was not. It was not. That was a lie. But he continues to say it even today, and that divides our country in a very significant way. So, for Americans to come and break into our capital, first time in history, since the British invasion. I mean, it was horrifying to me. And there's so many questions that need to be answered. I mean, why on earth would they not have had the National Guard the minute they needed them? Or you can go through a whole series of things. I think there needs to be that investigation.
Well, Senator, thanks for your service to our country. And it's great to get your take on our world at large. And I hope we talk again. It's been a pleasure.
Well, I hope so. I enjoyed it. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
And belated happy birthday to you, Byron Leslie Dorgan.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Goodbye.
Obviously still at the top of his game, and for those who are unfamiliar, he's 79 years old, so he is a sharp man. 30 years on Capitol Hill. A few other items. A listener noted that Jim Wharton had a loyal and devoted wife during his years at LSU and throughout his life, most of his life, Joan Wharton. She was an amazing lady, and she was at his side, and we wish the best to her and to his daughter, Sherry, who put him on the phone with me a few weeks ago, and we got to say our goodbyes, and he was a giant, and he was in our midst, and I hope he gets the appropriate send-off. And Scott Wharton, who played football at LSU rather well, nose guard, and number, 64, I believe, who played for the Tigers back in the late 80s. He is a doctor at Baton Rouge General. Phil Mickelson yesterday won the PGA tournament. Oldest man to ever win a major tournament. He's won six of them, and he's finished second in the one he has not won yet, six times in the U.S. Open. But 50 years old for Phil Mickelson, and congratulations to him. I remember there was a big stir in 1986 when Jack Nicklaus won the Masters at 86, his last major victory, and he holds the record. And Phil Mickelson has now done it at the age of 50. So people are doing great things at later ages, and that's good. And Phil has battled psoriatic arthritis for many years as well. Press Club today, open to the public at Drusilla at noon. Ron Fauché, former state lawmaker, a gentleman who went to Washington and made a splash with campaigns and elections, which at one time was the must-read for people following campaigns and elections across the country. And Ron Fauché will take a look at national and state politics, and we'll have some of the same themes, I'm sure, that Senator Dorgan did about how we can get along better, and we need to, because now the fringes in both political parties are often having the day, and it's resulted in chaos at the Capitol and beyond, and Ron Fauché will give his analysis. And Matt Doyle, knowing just as I did when we heard that the voice on Lay Lady Lay was not that of Robert Zimmerman, better known as Bob Dylan, who turns 80 today, has found another Bob Dylan classic that has a Louisiana theme. And let's give this one a listen, and you can start it now. And I think people who know Bob Dylan will recognize this one. Great song.
Early one morning, the sun was shining. I was laying in bed, wondering if she'd changed it all, if her hair was still red. Her folks, they said our lives together sure was gonna be rough. They never did like Mama's homemade dress, Papa's bank book wasn't big enough. And I was standing on the side of the road, rain falling on my shoes, heading out for the East Coast. Lord knows I paid some dues, getting through, tangled up in blue. She was married when we first met, soon to be divorced. I helped her out of a jam, I guess, but I used a little too much force. We drove that car as far as we could, abandoned it out west. Split up on the docks at night, both agreeing it was best. She turned around to look at me as I was walking away. I heard her say over my shoulder,
Bob Dylan, 80 years old today, awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature for having created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition. And he also is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, sold 100 million records, 10 Grammy Awards, we can go on and on. Signature support for Talk Louisiana is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Hope you have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.